Hail, hail. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Celtic Lifetime 11 podcast, brought to you by CelticUnderground.net. Today's guest is Mr. Paul Rutherford. Second show in a row where we've had someone that went to St. Modan's in Stirlingshire as the guest. We were both veterans of the Wayne Biggin stand. Had season tickets, possibly right next to each other, although we don't really remember that, but we wouldn't have been far from each other. We would actually meet years and years later when we were both aspiring writers living in Glasgow. We met at some party in the West End. Turned into a major session in the Admiral Bar. It's a good night. Paul now lives in London. He's heavily involved in Clapton Community Football Club, a club which went kind of viral a couple of years ago when they had a strip celebrating the flag of the Spanish Republic and the International Brigades and all that Spanish Civil War stuff. Once wrote a dissertation about that, if anyone cares. Paul, more than anything, he has the best voice of any person I've ever met. He's grown up in the middle of Scotland, lived in Edinburgh, lived in Glasgow, and smoked about a billion roll-up cigarettes along the way. And in true hipster style, he has chosen some, he's breathed some life into this podcast by choosing some alternative players. Enjoy the show. Right, welcome to the show, Paul Rutherford. How's things, Paul?
Good, Anthony. How are you?
Brilliant. I had my first swim in many moons today. Big Olympic-sized pool, 40 lengths, 2 kilometres. Feeling good for it.
So I've started going out my bike recently, but I've had screws falling out of it, so I'm currently back on two legs until I can get that fixed.
There's nothing worse. My bike last week, a nut on the back wheel just started coming loose every time I cycled. So every time, you'd cycle a kilometre and stop and just check, fix it. But I don't carry a spanner or any kind of tool. And I don't think my left hand or right hand is that strong to fix this. Bit of a nuisance, but still, I'll get that. I need to get that fixed, actually. Right, so you are on the show to give us your Celtic Lifetime 11. You provide the formation and all the players justifying whoever you choose. What is your formation?
Right, well, when I initially put this team together, I went for like an old-fashioned 2-3-5 with halfbacks and inside forwards, but I thought that's maybe taken a bit too far. But I basically kept the same team, and it's a 3-5-2, but one of the forwards is basically a number 10, so you've almost got a 3-6-1 with two. Your wide men are very attacking as well, so it's not a team I'd play away in the San Siro or in the New Camp, but I'd be pretty happy with it at Celtic Park to give someone an absolute doing.
Okay, but you are badging it potentially as a 3-6-1.
Yeah.
This is loading the midfield.
Well, I love a number 10, what can I say?
Apparently you love more than one number 10. Anyway, as we always start with the goalkeeper, who's your goalkeeper?
There's only really two choices for me that are even possible, just because we've only had two properly good goalkeepers in my lifetime. I've had maybe one or two that are half decent. Given that one of them is hanging up in the air right now, I'm going to have to go for the other one, who is Arthur Boric.
Ah, right. So petty modern squabbles have dethroned a choice, and we're going with an old lunatic.
It was a 50-50 between them, I think. And yeah, that petty vendetta's one day. I mean, Boric was a properly world-class keeper. That World Cup in 2006, he was one of the keepers of the tournament when he was at us. I don't know. His shot-stopping was just immense. It's not his shot-stopping. It's one-on-one. If it was a one-on-one, you wouldn't bet on anyone scoring against Boric. He just made himself so big.
Definitely.
And he's also a head case, which you love to see. Love to get a bit of that winding up going on constantly.
He was a troll before the time the word troll existed, I guess. I wonder when that term became, a dictionary word. You probably find that out, I guess. But yeah, he did enjoy trolling our greatest enemies, which, it made it very easy to love him.
Yeah, I mean, I like, well, there's Spartak when he saved the penalty? Was
it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's one that's just kind of burned out of my memory because that was a huge game. Also, the Dundee United when he just slotted away that penalty. It's like that yes. The two ends of Arthur Borok in two games when he just like top binned it. Like, oh, there you go, mate. It was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, that was one of the great penalties. He just stepped up, side foot, placed it, postage stamp, ain't no thing. Yeah, made it look so easy. The weird thing about, and I was watching back the penalty shootout recently against Spartak Moscow, and when they're all celebrating at the end, it says something like, even Lee Naylor gives him a hug, which seems to imply there was some beef between Lee Naylor and Boric. Is there a fight there that I've forgotten about? Does that sound familiar?
I mean, you're angry with everybody. I mean, I don't really read too much Daily Record back pages. I'm assuming that's the kind of place it was. I mean, Boric would fight with anybody, so that wouldn't surprise me at all.
I'd certainly bet on and be supporting Artur Boric in a Lee Naylor v. Artur Boric brawl.
Aye, definitely. I really liked Lee Naylor for that first season. He looked like a player and then he just disappeared. Fuck me anyway.
I sat on the fence. I didn't commit to the narrative that he was good. And then it turned out he wasn't. So I felt very justified in that position. To this day, even if I'm watching like the kids I teach playing football or something like that, and one of them carves across, like immediately over the goal, I'll still say, oh, I'll lean in. That's a Lee Naylor cross, the one that lands on top of the goal. To this day, when it's down the left hand side, of course. I would never accuse a right sided fullback of doing a Lee Naylor. That would need to get some new name. But yeah, a left footed cross that lands on top of the goal, that's a Lee Naylor. Anyway, Artur Boric is in your team.
Yes.
The holy goalie, and his distribution was good. He's throwing the ball out to one of three defenders. Are you going left to right or right to left?
I'll go left to right.
Okay, so who's your left of the three?
It's a pretty boring pick, this. I'm sure you're probably sick talking about him. When I was putting this team together, I had the rule that I had to have seen them play live. So yep. That ruled out a lot of players from like the 80s and stuff, but before my time. But I did go. I saw this player one time. I mean, I'm not in Glasgow anymore. So I went to one game at Christmas, which was a horrific 0-0 draw. And Virgil van Dijk was playing in that game.
Right.
So I can't remember anything about that game, but he ticks the box. I mean, he's just class. I've been a bit. I know some of my choices, I've picked my own favourites, but I mean, Van Dijk was just the best, and it's pretty hard to argue with him being in there. Even if it was, he was very casual, because he didn't have to be that good. And he probably got shown up for it a few times in Europe.
Yeah.
Just because he was casual, if you're slack against, I don't know, Ross County, then your man's not going to go through and score. And I did wonder if he'd make that step up to England, just because that was the one element of his game that wasn't, like, amazing. He had all the technical attributes, he had the physical attributes, but just that mentally he would just switch off and be a bit casual, and that was one thing he had to step up, and he's done that. I mean,
it's a funny week to be saying that, because obviously he had a high-profile mistake for Liverpool for the first time in a long time, and the commentators were all making a big deal. Oh, Virgil van Dijk makes mistake. And then add to that, watching the Celtic-Lyon game yesterday, just seeing how brilliant Denier is and was. Even back then, I was team denier on the grand debate that could be had there. And I was just thinking, if you'd put a back four of four deniers, you would never let in a goal. I mean, he's a proper hard man. Have you ever seen that video of him beating someone up in the street?
No.
Oh, like, Denier's a psycho. I didn't realize that, but yeah, he was nearly done for assault.
You're selling this Denier to me, can I?
Yeah. but no, Virgil van Dijk is our man.
He's just a Rolls Royce, you know. I mean, that's everyone says that, it's cliche, but that he is that good. He cruises through games.
Yeah,
he was too good for us. He's too good for the SPL, really. And that's probably an aside, but like a lot of people ask quite a question why players would want to go to Celtic and step up and love to go to the Premiership and is it a step up and stuff. But he had to do that to become a better player. He had to have that. And it's anyway. There's a lot of obviously Tierney chagrin at the moment, so it's just in my head. But it's I think Van Dijk had to go because he wasn't. I'm basing on this on the player he is now. He's in this team.
Yeah.
Because he had to. He really had to move to become that player, which is quite frustrating. But that's
The nature of times we live in. Right. Who's next to him in the centre of your three?
Right. I want ball players in my team.
Okay.
And so going back through the archives of Celtic centre backs who could pass a ball. O'Neill's defence is the only time we really had a good centre backs probably in my time. And yeah, you could maybe argue that Melby could pass the ball, but so I've gone with Chris Julien.
All right. One season so far, but still our current centre half.
Yeah, I'm probably a bit weighted to modernity in this team, but I think he reminds me a lot of Van Dijk, actually, just because he's a similar kind of player. He's bigger, maybe not stronger. Sometimes, as long as we're not playing Livingston, I'm happy with this team. He's just a class act. He's controlled on the ball. He doesn't really get shoved off it too much. He wins most things in the air. He's last ditch tackling's good. He's got it all. I'm almost concerned, but how did he end up at us at 27? Because he's a proper player.
We'll know in 2 or 3 years as to whether or not that pans out. Yeah, because he could go the way of how did we end up with a 27-year-old superstar? I mean, we paid a fair chunk of cash for him, but on the raw stats, the raw data would suggest why is he not playing for a Southampton or a Norwich? But there must be a reason. I mean, this is a guy that won a World Youth Cup with France, you know, the same team as Pogba. So he's obviously been in and around the French system his whole career. But there must be some fault line. I think he can be a bit soft at times. But like I say, on a good day, he is, to me, another Van Dijk. And certainly a guy that I want to see moving into a box for a corner, because I think he's going to score.
Yeah, I mean, just... I know I'm probably going to have hells of derision from a lot of listeners picking Julian in here. I was going through it and, like, I mean, who's struggling to find someone who I felt is genuinely comfortable in the ball? Like, I mean, my Celtic's foreign day started with Mark McNally and Malcolm McKay at the back.
Yeah.
And Julian just, he can pass the ball, and that's why he's in the team.
Okay, right. So, and who's completing this three-man defence?
I mean, this is crowbarring someone at the back line, really, which is apt, because that's what Martin O'Neill did to him when he was there. Just because when I was a teenager, this guy was my man, Jackie McNamara. He was my teenage hero, so he has to be in the team somewhere.
I'm glad he's in. He makes my lifetime 11. So I'm glad someone's finally introduced him so we can talk about him. Why, as a teenager, Paul, were you such a big Jackie Mack fan?
I think I played on the right when I was about 13, 14, when I was playing. And even I wasn't a right back, but he was the kind of marauding, gallivanting right back that getting into forward positions. I mean, yeah, I'd rather him than Donnelly. So I think that's why I ended up with Mack.
It's a strange one. I always remembered, it was one of these ones my dad must have picked up on an article about Scotland under 21s or something. My dad was saying, we should sign McNamara, you know, because he was aware that there was the original McNamara and that his son, same name, was coming through at Dunfermline. And he was always saying, we need to sign McNamara's boy. Even though I knew for a fact he'd never seen him kick a ball or anything. It was purely the fact he was doing quite well and he was Jackie McNamara's boy. Let's get Jackie McNamara's boy in. And he came and straight away into the team, first choice right back. Within a couple of weeks, he scored that brilliant goal away at Hibs when him and Simon Donnelly did a sort of aerial 1-2.
He hit
this sort of volley as it came over his shoulder. Absolute beauty.
Yeah, I remember being the stand that day for that. I was just the wee flick over and lobbed it in. Class.
Yeah, he really did come in. But the weirdest thing about his Celtic career was that he went from being a right back and being a right wing back / right midfielder under Janssen, where he gets a Scottish Player of the Year award playing as a right mid. And then years later, he gets the Scottish Player of the Year playing as a left back of a three. And he also played left back and everywhere else. He played centre mid in a Scottish Cup final and scored.
That's what I was going to mention. I remember just arriving after queuing to get into Hampden for about half an hour, just getting in as he scored early doors. Did he score early doors that game?
Yeah. Again, it was Hibs. He loved to go against his dad's old team, I guess. And there was a couple of games where he played in centre mid. You know, Martin O'Neill threw him in for whatever reason. Two seasons in a row against Dundee United, he scored like 25-yard smashes in August. I loved Jackie McNamara. I think he was one of the most underrated Celtic players there's been.
I mean, it's obviously the Liverpool goal, which is absolutely. I mean, that was his left foot as well. That's probably the one that sticks in the mind, just because that's probably one of my favourite games of that era. Of that era, definitely. But one of the favourite games I've been to, even though we didn't have the full stadium at that time. I don't think it was still
The Wayne Biggin stand was empty or not there, or it was getting built or something.
But I just I remember the atmosphere that night. One of the biggest, most exciting atmospheres. We went 2-1 up against Liverpool. The place was just jumping. I think that probably helps stick it in my memory, that goal from that game.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and he was there, wasn't he? He was there for Cheerio 10 in a row. He was there for the O'Neill era. Unlucky to become the Celtic captain just at a time when all the wheels were coming off. Probably deserved more than picking up one shitty Scottish Cup in a season that meant jack shit because of other performances. No, I love Jackie McNamara and glad to see him in your team. Right, so how's this midfield going to get shaped?
I've got two sitting deep, so giving a bit of cover in defence. So I'll start with defence midfield as well. First one, again, and I've gone through this, but if we're playing this attacking, we need a bit of ball retention. So Callum McGregor can go in the team, because if we need to keep the ball, I don't think there's anyone that I've seen who's as good at it. I did think about having Lambert in the team over him, because Lambert is probably one of my all-time favourite Celtic players.
Yeah.
But for specific tactical reasons, we need to keep the ball moving, McGregor's going in.
McGregor, yeah, very good chance of getting in my team. Just intelligent, so fast on his feet. Does everyone right?
Yeah, if he's playing that defensive role, he's the one taking off defence, and he's great at turning, like just taking the ball and turning. When he's playing a bit more forward, I've seen people play, he's like a wall, it just comes back off him. But when he gets it that bit deeper and he's got time to turn, then he can start picking the passes and like actually dominating the games. So yeah, that's why he's in there. He's just class, two-footed.
You're definitely right about the turning. And the other thing is he is a player that in a 180 can take the ball, turn and ping it to where it needs to go quickly. I mean, the opposite example of that would be, for example, when Barry Robson was at Celtic, he would take six touches when two is necessary. And that is why I love Cal McGregor so much. You know, just a guy that it's not about him. It's about how the team needs to be functioning and whether it's going left, right, forward, back, whatever. You know, if we've got the ball and it's moving, nobody can hurt us. He's just...
I mean, like, football really is like when you score goals in football, it tends to be a lot of them are counter attack or moving it quickly, spotting that gap and zipping it through. And just the way he's so quick at turning and getting the team forward, I think he slots right in if he can feed this forward line.
And he can strike a ball increasingly. I love those ones. There was a game, I think it was Hearts last season or something like that. And it was one of these games, you know, the game was probably won. I think we were 2-0 up or something like that. But he gets a shot from 25 yards and just cannons it into the corner. You know, and you see he clearly enjoys scoring goals, as he should. And it's really satisfying to see him just bury one and just, you know, celebrate it and know he was contributing, you know. And he scored a lot of bigger goals than that as well.
I mean, that is when he just rolled that one at the net at the cup final. I mean, that
cup semi. The one against the Rangers, yeah. That is one of the great modern Celtic goals. Just passed and just rolled it into the corner. Keeper didn't even move. What could he do? Yeah, and he's the only Celtic player that could or would do that.
I mean, not so sure I'd agree with that at the moment, because I think we've got a lot of players who are a bit more comfortable just in their own thought, which is, I think maybe that's just modern football and that's like the type of players we've got in about our forward line. But he's definitely one that would do it, just put money on him, making the right choice.
Yeah, and executing it. Right, cool. So who's the bosom buddy in the defensive role?
Because we've got so much going forward, we need a destroyer in there. I'm putting big Vic Wanyama in there.
Right. First appearance in the show. And again,
this is a very tactical choice. I mean, there's obviously a lot of good Celtic midfielders who could go in that defensive role, but I want someone who wins the ball. And that's what Vic is very good at doing.
Yeah. The season he came into the team, he literally, the minute he came into the team, we were like 12 points behind in October or something like that. When Yama came into the team, by Christmas, we were top of the league. And he was smashing in 25 yarders against the Hearts. Wanyama was an absolutely brilliant Celtic player.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he was on the bench for a European Cup final like a season ago after having really bad knee injuries, he's obviously still got it about him. Well, maybe not so much now. I would have liked to have seen him back at us, but...
I think he played in both legs of the quarters and the semis.
Yeah.
So he, as much as anyone, got Tottenham to a Champions League final. And history, you know, he got dropped and they lost. So, Sodom. I'd have taken Victor Wanyama back in a heartbeat.
I mean, I don't watch enough English football to really know if he's still got it. I mean, he's not playing much, so hard to say. But... For romantic reasons, get him in. He's Dallas. It's done now where he's got, he was in Canada now.
Yeah, Toronto or something like that. But yeah, just in terms of a fan affection, a guy that, you know, gets off the boat and says, what number do you want? 67. you know, just pandering to us. Just absolutely brilliant.
So do you reckon, like, was he just on his phone on Wikipedia as he was walking in? 67. Barcelona, obviously, I mean, one of the greatest nights in modern Celtic, and he's the one that scored the goal. And, I mean, I'm not, to be honest, I've not even rewatched that game in its entirety, because I reckon it'd be quite grim
view. Yeah.
But it was a defensive shift, and he was part of that unit. So, I mean, obviously, the petty vendetta keeper was the start of that show.
Historically, our only other number 67.
Exactly, yeah. I think it was class. I was sad that he left, but such a modern Celtic, and it's, you've got to just enjoy it. I'm going to give an honourable mention to someone who put in for, was almost in the team, who I know you're a big fan of, is this Mr. Biram Kayal. Just for, based on solely on how good we thought he might have been in 2010-11, yeah. He almost made it in the team, but he's sadly moved out by Big Vic.
Yeah, for 3 months, I was convinced Biram Kayal was going to be Celtic's greatest ever player, and then that was that. Anyway, right, so Wanyama, McGregor, they can both score a goal, they can both put in a tackle. And I'd say Wanyama's one of the hardest. If you had to pick a sort of Mortal Kombat of Celtic players, I think I'd only bet on Bobo Baldi over Wanyama. And even in a Baldi v Wanyama fight, I'd want Wanyama to win. Although I don't believe for a second he would. He's too nice a guy.
No, Nedy's winning that. Nedy's beating Baldi in a fight like that.
No. Right, so how's the shape of this midfield beyond this?
Well, it's basically just left to right at four, basically. Two wingers, two number 10s.
Ah, right, okay.
The wingers are nominally wing-backs, I suppose, but I wouldn't rely on them too much for defending. They'll put a shift in. No, I mean, in fairness, that probably makes... It's not like they're... I've seen them both play in this role, and a wing-back role, but they're definitely more forward players.
Right.
So I'll start on the right wing, and because we've not got much natural width in this team, it's all in the centre, so we need someone to stretch it a bit. So I'm going to put James Forrest in the right wing.
Okay. Second appearance in a row.
Is it, eh?
Yeah.
I mean, just longevity almost as well. I mean, when he first came through, everyone loved Torres because he was just pace and directness. That's what we thought we were getting with him. Get him running at somebody, he's just going to fly by them, or a balling behind even better. He'll get him behind them, he'll cut it back, he'll shank across, or he might pick one in the top corner. But then when He Who Shall Not Be Named came in, he revolutionized, he changed Forrest's career. Forrest made himself a great player in that period. He can use his 2 feet, he cut inside, you don't know which way he's going to go anymore. Got step overs, he's got a link-up play. I think he's an absolutely great player. I mean, he's wide on the right, but he's still really a number 10. There's going to be a lot of interchanging going on in this team.
Yeah.
But Forrest does give that natural option of, like, hitting the byline and swinging in.
When he first broke in, it looked like he had a really strong left foot as well as his natural right. And I was convinced he was a sort of the heir to Lubo in how two-footed he was. But then that phased out. He became very right-dominated to the point where I would have likened him to Didi Agat. You know, he had no left foot whatsoever. And then last year he cut inside, was it the Cup semi-final against Aberdeen, and gunned in a 25-yarder with his left foot. It's like, oh, it's back. You know, so one of my minor criticisms of him, you know, has ebbed away, and he's now firmly in a position where I would always pick him, and I would never hear any criticism about him. You take what you get. If he was as good as he was every single game, he'd be playing for Real Madrid. So let's be realistic about this. He's at Celtic. He wants to be at Celtic, and as long as he stays there, I'm happy for him to be in the team.
And he turns up in European games as well. I mean, he's scored us some big goals in qualifying. I remember being in the Nou Camp when Jordi Alba scored that last minute winner, and I was in the Barcelona end, and the boy next to me was just like raving about Forrest.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, I think he had a good run or something. It wasn't, but he didn't look out of place there.
And he has stepped up to play that level. And there was that great little phase last year when he started looking like bloody Gareth Bale for Scotland. Scored a hat trick in one game, and one of those times when Scotland just picks loads of Tims and we start playing well, you know.
We basically just played the Celtic team that day, and we just lost it.
And a couple of months later, they forget about it and start calling up Ryan Jacks and shite like that, and we turn shite. And then we ask the question, why are we still shite? It's like, well, I could answer that. Anyway, James Forrest.
Yeah, I mean, just his goal against Rangers. When the one where he turned inside and just like, and then like fired it across the way. I mean, I've watched it back on TV and it's probably not quite as good as I remember it in that moment. But I remember turning to the boy behind me like, "I was like Archie Gemmell, that was amazing, man."
I'd argue it is, and it is as good as Archie Gemmell's goal, other than the fact that it's not Wim Jansen getting left on his ass. It's what's his name?
I mean, the fact that two players just kind of got lost and ran away from him, Gemmo can probably win that, but in that moment, yeah. It was as good, if not better.
Who is it? I'm glad I've forgotten his name, but I did enjoy laughing at him. What was it? Halliday. Yeah, I guess that takes the goal down a peg when you're only beating shit, really. But I was glad that he followed it up with another goal against the Huns, you know, because it could have been easily, you know, if he does, his performance against the Rangers at Christmas time was rotten, and, you know, he owes us some big games against the Huns. But he did, yeah, he broke his duct with that brilliant goal in the 5-0 game, and then again scored a good winner the following season. So, yeah. Yeah, Forrest, excellent Celtic player. And, yeah. Glad to have him in your team. Right, so who's your first number 10?
Right, an easy one here. You're probably sick of it talking of him, Lubo. He's got to be in this team. I've got this team of attacking dandies, and Lubo's got to be in there. He's just so class. I mean, well, there's not much that hasn't been said about Lubo. Probably the most skillful player I've ever seen in terms of just being two-footed, being able to pick a pass, being able to strike a free kick. All-round great player. Probably didn't have the fitness when he came to us. And a player that these days we would, because obviously when he signed, nobody had heard of him, and it was all like in the press for who's this 33-year-old we've signing. And the fans were thought the same, really, you know, because, well, who is this guy? In the days of YouTube, you'd be like, oh, this guy.
Yeah, you'd be able to look it up, yeah. You know,
but back then, it's like, who's this joker? And he played his first game, I can't remember who it was against. The week
Dundee.
He played just a delightful through ball. I don't think we scored with it, but it was just a lovely through ball. And like, on the bus back after the game, we're all, there's a player in there. Maybe there's something in there. And then the next week, there's a player in there.
I remember there was two boys at my school who had a subscription to World Soccer. I was one of them. But I think for the most part, I just used to look at the pictures, to be honest. But yeah, from 1994 to 1999, every World Soccer magazine that came out, I read or looked at the pictures. But there was, I remember one boy in my school, wasn't a Celtic fan, but I remember him saying, oh, you signed Lubo Moravcik. And me saying, yeah, who is he? He's like, oh, he's good. Yeah, he's been in France for years. He's a Slovak guy. He's really good. And he was the one person I knew that had read his World Soccers and had some clue that it was this guy in France who was actually worth looking at. And it was very strange. He was probably the only guy in Scotland who made that call.
He's probably working as a scout for Motherwell.
One of my favourite Lubo moments, which came to nothing, was remember the European run where we won the three home games and lost the three away games. So it was the night Brattback scored two for Rosenborg.
Oh, yeah.
And Lubo got subbed on because obviously we were 2-0 down. We were getting beat. And we had a free kick. And Lubo literally ran from the dugout straight to the ball and took the free kick. Like, I don't think he even broke his stride. It was just like, fuck off, boys. This is mine. Just a 50-meter run-up for this free kick. He didn't score. I can't remember if he hit the wall or hit it over the bar or what. I just loved that intent. It's like, no, this is my turn. I was having a blether with his son last week, actually.
Is this your the Bratislava connection, is it?
Yeah. Small world. Anyway, right, so, yeah, Moravcik genius. One thing, again, the players that played in the 6-2 and the 5-1 are my real legends. And he is very much a key player in both.
No, I think I'd agree. I've probably not got as many of them in this team as probably deserving. But, I mean, that's, for me, they're like the high watermarks. I had a season booked for the last few years, not this year. So I've seen all those, like, the absolute spankings we've been dishing out to them over the last few years. But I don't know. I think because they're poor now, those ones from back then count about a lot more. Yeah, because they were unexpected. They just, I mean, that 5-1 game, that was one of the, that was the highlight. Because we, even when we won the league, they, like, stopped the 10. Like, we were battling. I think we beat them once that year, did we?
We beat them in the New Year game.
Malcolm McKay.
We drew in the Princess Diana game.
I remember Richard Gough getting at me right when him scored one that year. And so like that 5-1 game is the game actually that, well, we thought it was a sea change. Obviously that didn't quite happen then, but it felt like it was coming. Kind of O'Neill finally saw it over the line.
The 5-1 game was weird. I think it was the last Celtic Rangers game I listened to on the radio, because it would have been a Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock. So beyond that, everything was probably on the TV or I was at the game. But that was one that was just like, yeah, sitting in the living room in my house, just like stunned. You know, just, yeah, I knew some family members were at the game. But me, I think it was me and my mum and my sister or something, just like going absolutely bonkers, you know?
I think I just moved to Edinburgh to go to uni. And so it was my first day on the uni bus.
Ah,
and then
right.
Obviously didn't know anyone. The bus moved because buses move. But obviously when you don't know anyone, you're stuck. So I ended up back at some other random Edinburgh bus, took this wee boy under their wing, and I got absolutely battered with them that afternoon. It was a very good day.
Right, so who's your second number 10?
This is definitely a romantic choice. Andreas Thom.
Andy Thom, first appearance on the show.
Just, I think, the first season I ever had a season book at Parkhead. I'd been going odd games here and there before that, but it was the year when we signed Thom. And the first game of that season, I remember Dino Batumi. No, I don't know if he scored that day. I remember Simon Domi scoring a worldie, but
Simon Domi scored a beauty, but Thom scored two headers in the first half. So he'd put us 2-0 up. And then, yeah, Simon Domi scored an absolute peach.
But it's just, it was him and Van Hooydonk were obviously the two players, but I loved Andy Thom. I just, he had a pass, and he had a shot on him. He was just quite a classy player, which in that era, we maybe didn't have so much until then. I mean, I only saw the end of McStay. Colin was obviously great. I don't know, Thom just had that because he was a big money signing from abroad and all that. So he had that bit of romance about him as well. And I thought he was a great player as well. He's gone in there just for memories of my teenage years more than anything.
Yeah, bit of nostalgia. Excellent. My younger listeners might not be aware, Andy Thom was one of the first East Germans to get called up and play for a United Germany in the early 90s. You know, so a German international, played in Euro 92, came on in the final, but not, you know, sort of Klinsmann-esque superstar, but a fine player. And then Celtic picked him up in 94 or 95.
It's mad because we spent, I don't know, was it 2.2 million or something on him? Yeah. Maybe even more than that, but he was almost 30 when we signed him.
Yeah.
Which is unthinkable now. There's no not unthinkable. If we needed to fill a hole, we'd maybe spend a couple of million, but we'd be signing players at 21, 22 if they were for that money these days. It's fine.
But he was class. He was fast. He was intelligent. He could score a goal famously just away at Ibrox. Just gets it out of his feet and just hits an absolute shell.
That ball's still travelling.
Yeah, it was one of the great Celtic goals against Rangers. It's just like a good goalkeeper at the peak of his power doesn't even see it. And nobody would have seen it. It just, the ball just burst the net and confused the shit out of Jerry McNee, because in the same game, there was that moment where Rangers equalised, it got chopped off, and they didn't mention the fact it got chopped off and just sneakily changed the score from 1-0 to, or 1-1 to 1-0, and Celtic are still winning.
It was a good few minutes, if I remember rightly.
It was mental. I was like, just someone in my family saying, wait a minute, why are we winning again? You know, like, something happened. But yeah, Andy Thom scored some lovely goals.
I mean, just remember, like, he scored one at Pataudry, which was, well, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that he delicately chipped it in, and it wasn't a cross that he shanked that he went in the top corner. But
it was basically very close to being a reverse Lee Naylor. it just dropped in. I think he kind of celebrated it sheepishly. It was kind of like, but it was a lovely goal. If you brand it as deliberate, are.
Yep. Definitely meant it. Always give the Celtic player the benefit of the doubt, unless it's Gary Caldwell.
In which case, you would have known what he was doing because he would have pointed in that direction before he did it. But yeah, Andy Thom came, had a good first season. Can't remember. He scored in the Three Amigos game, you know, the Di Canio debut.
I mean, I remember that game in particular. I remember being at Rugby Park that day. The stand was shaking. It was like suspension in the stand was going. It was just bouncing up and down. And Thom scoring there as well. Like,
That was a great goal.
He didn't play that much. He was kind of in and out of the team a wee bit that season. Because we had a lot of, kind of, we had Di Canio and Cadet and Hooydonk. And who else? Was McStay still playing? Or
he was in and out through injuries.
So I think Thom, because we kind of, he was a 2 and a 4-4-2, but then we got Di Canio and Cadet came in. He was more of a number 10. He was more of a kind of...
Yeah. There's an interview on YouTube of him talking about that season. Second season, and he's very aware that he dropped in. He says he actually quite enjoyed not having the responsibility to score goals, and he liked hitting the, you know, the connecting pass and the assists and stuff. He was kind of he was happy to do that.
And there's also the Dundee United game as well, the cup game.
Yeah,
I mean, which I had a ticket for. I would have been in the temporary stand that day because that's where I sat, right behind the goal where those two last-minute comeback came in, but I was out getting horse 12-0 in whatever game I was playing that morning and made it back to the house for about 10 minutes to go in the Celtic game. So watched that on the TV, that comeback, and that's probably my biggest regret in Celtic is that I didn't go to that game that day because that just looked on the telly. It was amazing. I was going crazy, but
My sister and my dad were right behind the goal, so that last replay they had where it was just, you know, Andy Tom, his back, you know, running through one on one, and my family members were bouncing in the background. You could see them in a pre-HD environment, you know.
I'd have probably been in the row behind them or so if I'd been there, because that's where my seat was.
Absolutely class. Yeah, Tom was good. And we've got two players next to each other, born behind the Iron Curtain. There you go.
That's a nod to the podcast.
Right, left side.
Left side. Based on the fact that he won us the league alone in 2005-06, Sean Maloney's got in there.
Right, first appearance in the show.
Again, I mean, I've gotten a romance. I just got a season booked back at Parkhead. I'd had one for a few years, and that was an aging O'Neill side, which with Strachan ball just pass it side to sideness. And basically our game plan seemed to be get the ball to Maloney, he'll skin a man and create some space, and then it'll open up. And he did that all season. I mean, he scored some absolute crackers.
Yeah.
Got player of the year and young player of the year that year. Almost single-handedly won his league. Him and Zarafsky, maybe.
Yeah.
But won his league because we had, like, Lennon, who could hardly run by that point, kind of plodding about in midfield and stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing. I always post on Twitter, usually at this time of year, the endless line of Celtic's player of the year winners. You know, not... like Scotland's player of the year, you know, going back to Di Canio, Scotland's player of the year has basically been a Celt like 23 out of 25 years or something like that. And if you were to take all their individual seasons, you know, whose player of the year season was better than anyone else's, Maloney's that year would be up there with anyone's because he really was excellent. He scored some lovely goals.
Like, I mean, we're talking about Tom's goal against Rangers. I mean, that Maloney goal that went against Kloss, and Kloss just scrambling across, like smashing in from 40 yards. I mean, aye.
And the scissor kick away at Dunfermline.
Aye.
That was ridiculous. I was on a train that day. I'd moved to Edinburgh, and for some reason, that I'd planned to be in Edinburgh for the game, and then, you know, typical trains, they were running late, so it was one of these ones I had to listen to. And I remember weaving through the borders and just go 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 4, and it's just, oh, you bam. I would have enjoyed watching this one.
And Lennon scored.
Yeah. Neil Lennon shapes one in from the edge of the box. Zarafsky scores, like, the rest, basically.
Yeah, so, like, well, if I'm having Moravcik, who's the master, and then Maloney, the Padawan's gone in there, it goes along with, like, it's what happened to Maloney was a bit sad, not sad. He never really lived up to that potential, not potential, like that level they had in 05-06. O'Neill, he got injuries even the next season. He wasn't that regular. Then he moved to Villa with O'Neill, looked all right, then injuries took him. And then he came back and he was decent for us, but never quite at that level. But he was just a class player, though. I mean, I'm kind of talking him down here. I love Maloney. I think just he's a similar stature to myself, which might be why he gets a wee few bonus points. Moan the wee man. If you can see your knees in shorts, then it's cheating.
Yeah, a couple of months before his debut, remember he came on at Ibrox?
Yeah.
And I think I remember my brother made the observation that O'Neill must have just looked around the youth team. It's like, right, who's got the most Fenian name imaginable? We've got Sean Maloney on the books. He's coming on at Ibrox just to wind them up, which may have been the case. But no, a couple of months before even that game, I'd gone to a youth cup tie in Dundee at Dens. Literally, there was two people in the stadium, me and Willie Faulkner. He might remember that. I was the other guy. And Sean Maloney scored two in a 2-0 win and then got carried off in a stretcher. So that game was a metaphor for what would be his entire career. Lighting it up, being excellent, and ended up in the hospital. But yeah, a couple of months later, he was in the first team. And there was flashes, wasn't there? He really did look good. And then with O'Neill gone, he did take the responsibility that Strachan gave him.
I mean, we're talking about those Strachan seasons, but like it was Maloney one season, then McGeady the next season. Basically, that was our Nakamura came into more next season, to be fair. Because Naka was there that season 05-06 as well, but he was finding his feet. He was, he'd score a free kick, he'd maybe have a little flash, but he wasn't particularly consistently dominating games.
Yeah, the players of the year for those three seasons were Maloney, Nakamura, McGeady in that order. And that would definitely reflect the seasons where they were the most influential. But yeah, the year Maloney got player of the year. A goal in the League Cup final and a star in a romped league title. Absolutely excellent. He played well in the Champions League once or twice against Benfica, but not well enough for us to win a group, or maybe. He must have been in the groups that we progressed, but I don't think he ever.
That season, did he play? Because he went to Villa the next season, was it?
At the time we pumped Benfica 3-0. The time we pumped Benfica 3-0, he set up Kenny Miller to score. So he did have at least one good game in the Champions League, and then went on to win an FA Cup with Wigan, incredibly. And one of the great nights in Celtic Park of recent times, when Scotland beat the Republic, and the managers were Strachan versus O'Neill, and just what a brilliant celebration of Celtic-dom that evening was.
I know, guys, yeah. I watched that in a pub in Salisbury.
But yeah, he took a short corner, run it into the box. Scott Brown flicked it out to him, and he shaped it into the bottom corner. Absolutely brilliant goal.
It's like that was like a goal off a computer game where you work a wee set piece movement, and it all comes off. It was just perfect execution. I mean, that's the guy you'd want if you want somebody to pass the ball at the corner from 18 yards through a box. That's the guy who'd want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, Sean Maloney was a cracking player. And that leaves us with one more player, our striker. Who could it possibly be?
I know. Is there even any point talking about this guy? Larsson, obviously. I mean, it has to be the team. It's a joke. It's lies otherwise. Aye, just the best. What can you say?
I quite like the idea of a Larsson-Tom duo. I know you're not playing it as a two-up top.
Well, it's going to be very fluid. Those five basically are changing a lot.
Of course, Tom and Larsson did actually play. Remember, they played at the start of the Anson season, and there was a day, the week before we played Dundee United in the League Cup final, we horsed Dundee United in the league 4-0, and Tom played his way back into the Cup final team with a brilliant performance. And then the week after the Cup final, he played the worst performance I've ever seen in my life away at Kilmarnock, and that was the last time he ever pulled on boots for the Celtic. But he did have that one last hurrah at Celtic Park where he played next to the King of Kings, and I think Larsson got one, Tom got two, maybe something like that. I'm not sure.
I was definitely at that game, but I can't remember the score.
Yeah. I think it was the first of Henrik Larsson's 50 dinks of a goalkeeper in a green and white shirt.
I mean, what I always remember about Larsson is the amount of chances that he missed. And like people, it's just because he got so many chances. He scored a lot, but he wasn't scared to miss. Because I was watching the Larsson Goals DVD with my cousin, he's maybe a bit younger than me, so he didn't really see Larsson in his prime. And it's like, what this doesn't show is just how many chances he created for himself or got played in. He's five or six a game, which is just outrageous. I don't know how he pulled it off.
Yeah, I was thinking about Larsson just last night when I was watching El Hamid go down with an injury, and it just triggered that thing in my mind. Also, Dembele watching the Lyon game, and just the idea that I never really love Celtic players who might not be playing next week for an unspecified reason. Do you know what I mean? It just wears me down. Oh, his ankle's gone. Oh, his wrist's gone. Oh, he's got, I don't know, wisdom teeth coming in. Just all that shit. It wears me down. Whereas Larsson, you literally had 7 years of, yes, he's got a broken leg, he can't play. He'll be back as soon as that's fixed and not miss a minute beyond it. And then he's going to break his chin or his jaw at one point because some guy is going to flail an elbow in him. But again, he'll be back in 2 weeks to score against Liverpool. Beyond that, 7 years of, yeah, I'm playing. I'm ready to go and I'm scoring goals. I loved that. That was one of the many great things about Larsson. He always played.
I remember just for there was a period at Celtic Park where it was almost pointless that they gave out a man of the match because it was him every single week. Every single week, like whoever the sponsors player of the match, Henrik Larsson. And you couldn't argue it. It was he was the best. And a very good team. He was just the best by miles. It was like the kind of the first O'Neill year, for example, where he just dominated
53 goals. Yeah. And there was that, it was Chris Sutton said somewhere recently, he was joking about how one year like Neil Lennon got Player of the Year at like the, you know, the award function, the players function, and such that they're all just sitting laughing because they all knew, you know, this guy Henrik, 7 years in a row Player of the Year. In reality, maybe five or six. I mean, even the season he breaks his leg, he scores like 17 goals. You know, he'd racked up that many by what, October or something like that. Just an absolute goal machine. And then that season he came back on the last day of the season and played with all the kids, and we beat Dundee United, and he played in the hole behind Paul Lynch and Birchill, I guess. Simon Lynch. But yeah, and then he went to the Euros and played for Sweden, scored against Italy. That was one of the great Celtic goals in a major tournament, when he got put through one-on-one with Toldo, who was the goalkeeper of the tournament for Euro 2000. And Larsson just does him with a step over, leaves him on his arse. That was his first goal after a leg break and 6 months out. Just what a player. What a genius.
I mean, remember, I was at Easter Road, that famous like Chick Charlie pass.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah. As was I.
Not many people really, I think, thought, oh, who's this? We signed a donkey here. Yeah. But it was a bit, this guy's meant to be the real deal. And was it St. Johnstone, his first goal? Your memory for
the diving header.
Yeah. Like, I think that's what changed it for us. But even in his first season, a lot, because he wasn't really a number nine. I mean, he was number seven, but he was that kind of goal scoring striker. He was always he's more of a number 10, like we've got tons of. And it was only over a bit of time that he was rattling in so many goals. Like, actually, you just stay up front a wee bit, Henrik.
Yeah. It was the second season.
You run about, Henrik, because you do what you want, because you're that good, you're going to score goals.
There was that spell in the second season when he just, I think he'd like three hat tricks in four home games, or was it? I think it went hat trick, one, and then five away at Motherwell or something. Do you know what I mean? He just started scoring take the piss numbers, and it was just like, oh, what's going on here? And he never stopped. You know, once he started, it was just ridiculous. And he scored so many against the Huns. Again, once he started doing it, he never stopped. I remember at uni there was a Dunfermline fan. He used to always tell me, oh, Larsson never does it against us. Andreas Skerla has his number. And I remember looking up the stats. He averaged like 2.1 goals a game against Dunfermline. I mean, his numbers would have been like that against everyone, but the comical, you know, delusion that people have, oh no, he never does it against us.
Another, like, this is, again, obviously, there's all the great points of Larsson, but what is one thing he was really good at, that it was winning throw-ins. When we were getting, like, when he's got the ball just in their half, there's about three defenders around him, he'd win a throw-in. We'd very rarely, like, give the ball away in those situations. Yeah. He wouldn't just, like, try and skin a man and then run it to nowhere. He'd know to just, like, flick it off someday, right, throw in Celtic ball, move up the pitch, yeah. Which... like, well, I mean, obviously that's not particularly highly rated given all his rest of his
talent.
But in terms of just working for the team, he had a lot more than just scoring goals and creating goals.
Yeah. One of my favourite performances was when it was after he was at Celtic, he'd moved on. It was Euro, or was it the World Cup? It was either Euro 2000 or the World Cup 2006. Might even have been the Euros 2008. I'm not sure how late he went. But there was a game where Sweden were getting put out. And they got put out. It was against Arshavin's Russia, right? So it was Russia 2008. And Sweden were getting, they were getting put out. And Larsson dropped into play centre mid for the second half and was the best player on the pitch. Do you know what I mean? Just passing, spraying, winning tackles, charging people. This is like when he was like 35 or something. And he was the best player on the pitch in an international match, playing in a position that he did not play. He was just so good.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel guilty by packing this team full of, well, obviously Larsson's your striker and all these number 10s, and thinking of all the great strikers we've had. A target man would probably work in this, somebody can hold it up a bit more, but...
He could do everything.
Larsson can do it himself. I was more just kind of, you've got your Suttons and even your Viduka. I thought he was a great player for Celtic.
Viduka was a great player.
Obviously a bit of an arse, but fine player. Cadet was on just for his goal scoring, was almost in there, but a Cadet was maybe in this kind of lineup with all these number 10s would score a barrel load as well, but
ridiculous.
Larsson's too good to be kept behind him.
You'd love to see Larsson play next to all of them. We were lucky we got to see we saw Larsson play next to Maloney, next to Tom, next to Mravchik, next to Sutton, next to Hartson. We never got there. Amazingly, I think Larsson even played in a game with the Canio. away in Dublin. And then DeCanio buggered off like the next day. It was like the last preseason friendly or the first preseason friendly of the Larsen season. But that's a weird thought. But yeah, we never saw a Larsen cadet duo, which would have been ridiculous. Or even a Larsen Van Hooydonk, the Feyenoord connection. That would have worked as well. But yeah, Larsen's in there as he always is. As good as it gets. Now, finally, I think that team, would this team win in Seville? I'm just going to say yes.
I mean, yeah, as a forewarned at the start, this team would dominate Celtic Park, but I would not play it away in the new camp. I'd be a bit worried about it.
I could see Wanyama just grabbing Deco by the throat and lifting him like, you know, Thanos with Loki in the Avengers movie, just crushing him.
The more I look at it, actually, the more I'm thinking, actually, they do a job that they've packed the midfield, getting about them, to stop the ball, stop them moving it around. I'll go with it.
As we always end the show with, who is the one that got away? Who could have supplemented the super team? Who's the player you wish Celtic had signed?
I'm going along I was basing this on players we almost might have signed. Is that the premise?
See it as you see it.
Well, I mean, Ginola is always the player that sticks in my head as being someone we almost had and didn't they? We wouldn't have Andy Tom in the team if Ginola came that year, because that was the kind of one sign in the season policy, but one big name player to get to sell the season books. And he was just class. I mean, he again fits in by players who like to pick it up in the hole and spray it about, ping in the top corner, beat a man. And it was so close. Obviously, the gap between England and Scotland was a lot different then in terms of just because ticket money was what paid wages. Whereas something like that now probably wouldn't happen if there's a big Premiership club in for a classy player from France, he's probably going to go there.
I wonder if we had a time machine and we could go back and say, right, this is our last chance to sign a marquee player. You know, that we will never be able to do this again. I wonder what the year was the cutoff. I mean, I know Larsen was one of the highest paid players in Britain at the time, but even then we didn't pay crazy wages for him. You know, I wonder what was the last time we could have gone and spent big money in inverted commas. Who could it have been? And yeah, Ginola would have been a worthwhile investment because we would have made the money back.
Yeah, I mean, probably not going Celtic because we'd have probably kept him until his contract ran down and then the boss, because that's the way we operate. Well, in recent seasons, we were maybe not so bad at it, but previously, business was never something we were that good at. But I stuck in the throat again. It was just because I remember when he played us in a pre-season friendly and Newcastle and gave him absolute pelters. There was a lot more kind of...
He came back as well in a Tottenham shirt in a 2-2 draw that Darren Jackson scored in.
Maybe that's a game.
And I remember wasting a lot of energy booing David Ginola. And I had no beef with David Ginola, but I did remember enthusiastically getting involved in that pantomime and abusing that poor Frenchman for 90 minutes.
I mean, I'm pretty sure he thrived on that kind of... he's got that kind of look in his eye. I bet he loves getting it right up him. There's some players who, like, can tell, just love getting stick, because then when they skin two men and slot in the corner, just like, aye, all right, you like that?
Yeah. The only other time I gave a player that much abuse, and again, it was someone that predated my beef. It must have been Mo Johnson's last game at Celtic Park for Falkirk, and it would have been Tommy Burns, the Tommy Burns season. You know, first season at the new Celtic Park.
I was in Temple Stand that day. I remember.
We beat Falkirk, and this little redhead was running around up top, just still getting it thick. Amazing to think it was only what, 5 years after the crime at that point, he was still getting it. I got well involved that day as well. Anyway, excellent. Thanks for doing the show, Paul. This is an interesting team. A lot of new talent that's been breathed into the database. I'm now collecting a database so I can see who, you know, is our more popular player.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is cult heroes, if I'm honest. There's a few in there who, if I was to pick, who is the absolute best team that's going to rule over everyone. I mean, I imagine a lot of people have the same team. So I'm going for some personal heroes. David Hanlis sadly misses out.
For me, Wanyama and Matt Namara are guys that are both in my equation. Like, they would be in my... And I'm surprised that nobody's mentioned them up to this point, because they're just brilliant Celtic players, brilliant footballers. It was good to have some new names. All right, I'll let you go back to your hipster London lifestyle. Hail, hail.
Cheers. Cheers, guys.
This podcast was brought to you by Supersound.